Hi, I'm Norma Caruso. Steven, I'm a glutton for punishment because I've been playing Dark Souls, and I think that's all I need to say.
Steven Duncan, I'm glad to know that you're getting right back into masochism, Norm.
And this is the Level 7 Podcast. Welcome to the Level 7 Podcast. On today's episode, we're talking about a confirmed release date for the PlayStation Vita.
We're talking about the Mario Kart 7 Online.
And our main topic, Dark Souls and Batman Arkham City. We give our first thoughts on those two games. So let's get right into it. PlayStation Vita has a confirmed release date of February 22nd. Does this handheld have a chance to overtake the Nintendo 3DS?
Was I the only person that was disappointed when you saw the release date?
I was expecting a February release date, actually.
Here's my thing. If they wanted to take over that market, they're primed to do it. You know, we've talked at great length that the 3DS isn't really performing where I was expecting it to perform. They could have released during the holiday season, had a good quality software lineup, and, you know, just blown the 3DS out of the water, and they could have took in command for it. Because, I mean, 3DS, yeah, the pre-orders are up, but they really only have, like, two good games coming down the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And this would have been their chance.
Well, I don't know if they're going through... if they just want to make sure they get it right, or if they want to make sure they have certain software titles released in February. But I think the system is powerful enough. You've got the 3G, you've got the Wi-Fi, the graphics on that thing are pretty amazing. And I really like the dual analog controller as well. So I think it definitely has a chance to overtake the Nintendo 3DS, but I don't know if it will. I'm just a little hesitant because of the way the PSP went.
Yeah, like I saw, is it weird that when I looked at the features for the Vita, I was most excited about dual analog? Is that odd?
I mean, that's what I thought was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
And they have the demo video and you see the little analog sticks rolling around. It's like controller porn.
Yeah, like I don't have to worry about the nub. One of the things I'm a little concerned about, the release is pretty, you know, around the corner, but we're, you know, it's, you know, they only have like three titles confirmed for American release, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's, I'm a touch worried about that. Norm, the online features for Mario Kart 7 have been outlined. Are you excited for the online play? And has Nintendo started taking strides towards better online play?
They definitely have. And one big thing is they've gotten rid of friends codes, I believe. So that's a good thing. But Mario Kart 7, you've got customizable races now. You can record footage of the races, which I think is kind of cool. And you have a new messaging system. So you can message friends, you can download ghost tracks of other players, and they're definitely going in the right direction with this. Mario Kart 7, well, Mario Kart in general should be played online. That's where the evolution of this game is going to be, and openness they have, the better.
Yeah, because when I think Mario Kart 7, I don't think about the single-player experience.
No.
I do think about playing with you know, the random people online. I think they're doing certain things right with this. Eight players, you know, that's cool. You can play with either friends, random people, or rivals. That's cool. The community idea is pretty cool, where you can, it's basically Mario Kart 7 chat rooms with, you know, predetermined rules for each of the races. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my problem. The communities, you have to have, like, when you create a community, it gives you that 14-digit code. So, yeah, they got away from friend codes, but now one of their biggest online games is going to be using community codes. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, they just need to get away with the whole codes thing in general. It should just be open and just have like a lobby. Like a lot of PC games have just a lobby, and you choose who you want to race, and you just race them. I mean,
yeah, it's like Nintendo's afraid of the alphanumeric standard, like, you know, one through any character, one through zero, they're fine with, but A through Z, oh no, that's going to bring down civilization as we know it.
You think Mario Kart could do that?
I think Mario Kart could probably take over the world. I think it'll be the next evolution of Big Brother. We'll be writing about it in 30 years.
You watch. Or maybe this next game will take over the world. Kirby's Adventure, originally for the NES, is getting a 3D release on the 3DS. What do you think of this?
I'm glad to see Kirby's Adventure coming out. It's a great game. You know, it's sure it's a rehash, but to put it on, you know, the mobile marketplace, I like that. I like that idea. Why are we doing it with 3D? Didn't I just get done saying how much I hate that technology? And now we're going to take a perfectly fine game, a great game, and we're going to muck it up with, you know, with modern technology?
Well, I think it's fine to add 3D. You can always turn it off if you don't like it.
Then what's the point of adding it? Like, you know that if you add it in, it's going to make the experience worse. Well, then take it out. Why not put it in the first place?
It's just a downloadable game to play on your 3DS. I think it's fine. Just if you don't want to play it in 3D, just turn off the 3D.
I don't know. Like I said, I enjoy that this is coming out. Here's a problem I have with it, though, and I want to give more of a more informed opinion about this. However, with 3D technology, you can't really preview stuff the way we're used to. You know, we're used to like going to YouTube and checking out videos.
Right, and you can't see the 3D
exactly
just by watching a YouTube video.
Right, and the only way to preview this technology with certain things is either have the technology with you and, you know, either buy it or do whatever preview system they have.
Mm-hmm.
Or like go to a store and you know, do the little what do they call kiosks, and pray that one of the attendants don't, you know, come up to you and say, "Hi, how are you doing? Can I help you today?" No, you can't.
Well,
you can't.
Have you noticed that Kirby's kind of on a roll lately? You got Return to Dreamland, you got Mass Attack, and now you got this release. And this is actually one of the better Kirby games. This is the first game where he could copy enemies, so it kind of like created the franchise.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, he is on a strong roll, and that's good to see. It's a good property that hasn't been beaten to death as some of his counterparts. So I'm glad to see Kirby in the mix again.
You're doing good.
Yeah,
Kirby.
So Atlas's Catherine has sold 500,000 copies. Is this the game that puts Atlas in the eyes of the mainstream market?
Aren't they kind of already mainstream? Like, pretty much, if you're a gamer, you know about Atlas now. I think Atlas is that company that brings over those quirky, obscure games from Japan and puts them in America. But I will say this, Catherine it's a very unique game. It's very interesting. I'm surprised it sold so well because it's just such a quirky game. I mean, you've got, you know, you're trying to get the affection of two different girls named Catherine. And did you hear about the collector's edition, and you can get like a pair of underwear, and they got all this like the soundtrack too, I think.
No, I didn't hear about that, but I'm glad you told me about it, because I might run out and grab it tomorrow and see if my girlfriend will monitor that underwear.
Well, awesome. It's I think it's guys' underwear.
Exactly, like, and get my girlfriend
boxers.
But
and it comes
right.
In a pizza box.
I'm glad to see that this was the game that's kind of been. I don't want to say breakout, because yeah, it sold a good amount of copies, but we're not talking about, you know, Call of Duty numbers here. glad to see that something unique made its way into this discussion. Because, you know, we've been talking, you know, actually for almost years now about, you know, uniqueness is kind of leaving. I don't think they're in the mainstream yet. I have to disagree with that, Norm, because you're thinking in our little community of what we consider gamers, yes, we know what Atlas is. However, if I went and talked to a buddy of mine who's more into PC gaming and does the occasional like Xbox shooter game, he doesn't know Atlas. I think Square would be something that's kind of mainstream because gamers and even, you know, people outside of the gaming bubble know what it is. Atlas, not so much yet. And I love the company. I really do, but I don't know if I see them moving towards true mainstream in the near future.
Well, fair enough. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have our main topics, Batman Arkham City and Dark Souls. We both played the games. We'll give you our first impressions. We'll be right back.
Fan of the show? Get regular updates on Facebook and Twitter at Level 7 Cast.
Welcome back to the Level 7 Podcast. We are on our main topic, Batman Arkham City and Dark Souls, but we're going to start with Batman Arkham City. And Steven, you've been playing this game for the past few days. What do you think of it so far?
Spoiler alert, it's great. It's fantastic. It's what everybody was saying, you know, we want this, we want that. It's there. It's good. The basic premise of it is, so I can get the plot just kind of out the way, it's Arkham Asylum, for lack of, you know, better explanation, has been expanded to Arkham City. So now instead of just, you know, one building, you have an entire city that is this prison, and Batman's in there to stop it. That's the quick and dirty explanation.
Now, I have a quick question.
Sure.
Do you need to know any backstory to the Batman series to understand the plot in this game?
That's hard to answer coming from somebody who has followed Batman for so long. It wouldn't hurt to play the first game because the first game has a lot of origin stuff for the villains. Mm-hmm. So you can understand them a little bit better. But there are enough villains in here. Basically, you just have to know the names.
Yeah. I can't imagine anyone not knowing who Batman is, but just if maybe they're just not familiar with what Arkham Asylum is or just any of the characters in general.
Well, there's a couple of characters you wouldn't really know if you were just kind of, not really a comic book fan, like mm-hmm. Solomon Grundy or Victor Zsasz. But they do a really good job of telling you who all the characters are. They have full bios for all the characters. There are recordings you can find to further, you know, delve into these characters. And that's actually one of the best parts about this game is the characters. I know all these characters inside and out, top to bottom, with the exception of maybe Victor Zsasz. They don't really use him too much in the books that I've read. But the characters I do know, they are scripted and voice acted to a T. Like they're great. I was never a big Two-Face fan. Two-Face is one of the villains you deal with early on, and they portray him great. It's been a while since I've been a fan of Harvey Dent. They really, you know, play up certain aspects of him as they do with everybody. And then from the other angle, like I said, I haven't really heard of Victor Zsasz. They have side quests for the non-main villains. so you can, you know, kind of get to know him. Like Bane has a side quest and you can help him with something and you, you know, dive more to that character.
Can you control these characters? Can you control like Bane or Commissioner? No. Okay.
No, you can't. You get to control Catwoman, and then later on in DLC you can control Robin and Nightwing.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I didn't know who Saz was, but after I saw his writing and his scripting, I want to find out more about this character. I really want to go on his side quest so I can see what he's like. And the writing is just that good with these characters. They're, you know, they're even designed wonderfully. Which is one of those things you're afraid of when you get into a comic book, anything outside of comic books, comic book movies or comic book video games. Will the costumes translate well? And we've seen costumes be completely busts.
Like that new Catwoman. Have you seen the new Catwoman outfit?
I have. Somebody was calling for that outfit to be DLC. And no, because it would stand out, you know, all the black and then just the big red lips.
The little Halloween mask covering the eyes.
Yeah, with the supposed cat ears.
Mm-hmm.
But that is definitely a different topic for a different show.
Definitely.
But all the character designs are done really well. They have this happy medium between comic bookish and kind of realistic. I mean, it is Batman. It can't be so realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing too gaudy. There's nothing too over the top. Like Harley Quinn might be the most over the top character design, but it's because she's, you know, she's nuts. She's supposed to be over the top, and her character design really reflects that.
I believe they actually got many of the voice actors from the animated series to voice the characters.
They did. In fact, the voice acting spot on. It's wonderful in every aspect, from Batman all the way down to that one thug that has that one line. They're all voice acted great. One of the only bad things about this game is that this is supposedly Mark Hamill's last appearance as the Joker, which is a shame because, you know, everybody that's going to do the Joker after him, we're all going to go, Mark Hamill did it better.
Luke Skywalker did it better.
Yeah, well, no, it's Mark Hamill. He's done enough with the Joker. We're going to call him Mark Hamill. and he does a great job too in just everything, you know, the graphics. Oh, which by the way, here's something about the graphics that I'm really happy about. It's dark without being brown. Obviously there is brown. They're not going to, you know, ignore color, but there are games that are.
Yeah, it's not like the Gears of War where everything is brown.
Exactly. Because that's what means edgy in today's culture, is just put a brown filter on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not this. It is dark. It is dingy, but there are different color tones. You know, there are greens, there are reds, there are blues. So it is just a gorgeous thing to look at. I know I spent a lot of time harping on everything but the gameplay. But the gameplay is essentially the same from Arkham Asylum. Here's the big difference, though, is that the world is just bigger. Way bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's... When people complain, the biggest complaint about Arkham Asylum was the length. This game covers that. I've been playing now, I want to say I'm approaching somewhere between 7 and 10 hours. I don't think there's a true game clock, and if there is, I haven't paid it, no mind. I'm only 8 or 9% through the game.
So there's a big open world to explore.
Yes, and it's wonderful to go around and explore because it's not just the environments. There are the random side quests where you can take out random thugs, you know, taking out innocents.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, everywhere you go, you hear conversations everywhere. This world is fully fleshed out. All the thugs have dialogue. All the thugs have something that they're talking about. it's just wonderful. And like I said, the core gameplay is still there. The combat's still fluid. The stealth is still, you know, it's like a moving kind of tactical game once you start getting into stealth. The puzzles are enjoyable. There's enough side quests to keep me busy for quite a while. It's just, I know this game's good when at the end of the day, and I have to turn it off because I have to go to work or I have another obligation. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking in my head, there's not enough hours in the day because I want to sit down. I want to give time to this. It is just fantastic, top to bottom. I really think this might be one of the Game of the Year candidates.
Wow, so that's a pretty big... That's a pretty... You think very highly of this game, then.
Oh, completely and utterly. I can't sing its praises high enough. I want to dive right back into it, but like I said, you know, we've gotten older, and you know, life kind of takes precedence, which is something I wish I would never say.
And you work for me now. You're recording this podcast.
Yeah, I know. You crack the whip kind of hard, dude. I could be playing it now. But
hey, you know, hard work brings reward.
That's what we're hoping. That's what they used to tell me.
Nothing yet, but it'll come. Trust me.
So that's my thing, and that's me gushing and gushing and gushing over a game. You've had experience with Dark Souls.
Yes, I've been playing Dark Souls for the past 3 days.
Okay, so why don't you tell me about that? Like, why did you want to get into this, you know, masochistic exercise that is Dark Souls?
Well, first I'll give a little background information. Dark Souls it's not a sequel to Demon Souls, which came out, I believe, a couple years ago for PlayStation 3 only, and that game was notorious for its difficulty. Dark Souls is like a spiritual successor. It's made by the same company. It's made by From Software, and they're known for their Armored Core games, which I played a lot of on the PlayStation, but that's a completely different game. But Dark Souls is... I decided to try it out because my friend Brian played it, and he said he didn't like it. But I heard a lot of good things. I heard it was difficult, but it was still good. So you can't say a game is bad just because it's difficult, unless it's, like, unfairly difficult.
Well, then that's where one of my questions wants to stem from. I have heard the harder thing, but I've also heard that it's fairer than Demon's Souls. Now, is it too hard so that it's, like, cheap? Is it that type of difficult?
Well, I can't comment if it's, you know, not as hard as Demon's Souls because I don't have a PlayStation 3. I can't compare it to it. I will say this, yes, it is a very difficult game. Yes, there are cheap moments in the game where you literally have no idea something's going to happen. For example, I was walking up some stairs in kind of like this undead kingdom, and all of a sudden one of these undead soldiers appears with a barrel and lights it on fire and pushes it down the stairs. And it's coming like super fast at you, and you kind of got to try to dodge it. But, you know, your character doesn't move that fast. At least mine doesn't anyway, because I have a knight. And, you know, you slow down based on how much equipment you're carrying. So I couldn't dodge it. I mean, there was literally nothing I could do, and the barrel just knocks you off the edge and you die. And the frustrating thing is you have checkpoints. It's a big open world. Dark Souls is a huge, like, fantasy open world. And you can only, like, save and kind of catch it, like, level up. And you have checkpoints, and they're at these little bonfires that are around the world. And you light the bonfire, and you can save your game. You can level up your character. The more enemies you kill, the more souls you gain. And you can level up based on the amount of souls you have. So it can be frustrating because every time you go to a bonfire, all the enemies respawn. So it can be a grind in some areas, especially near the beginning.
Yeah, well, you were talking about the open world, where Demon's Souls was more of a linear, you know, World 1-1, World 1-2.
Right.
And they've transitioned to this open world. Do you think that's a better transition? Like, do you think the open world works better than the linear world?
I think in this kind of game, yes, I think the open world does work better because there's a lot of customization. You can, all the equipment, you know, magic spells, there's, you can carry a sword and throw fire bombs at people. There's a lot more RPG to this game than I thought there would be. So it's not an action game. It's an action RPG game. And so the open world does fit really well. It's cool to discover things and you can go explore, but you also have to be careful because a 20-foot demon might appear and kill you instantly. So, and it's weird because the thrill of that, like knowing you don't know what's around the corner, that's exhilarating. That's what makes Dark Souls such an experience.
So one of the biggest things I saw about the gameplay about Demon Souls that I haven't found out if they've fixed it in Dark Souls, can you pause in this game without dying?
You still can't pause the game. You can bring up a menu, but the game is still active while the menu comes up. And I've died several times while trying to equip myself with something. Literally, the only safe place is if you can find a safe place, or at the bonfires, it's usually safe.
Have you played any with the online?
Yeah, and the online is kind of, it's, as long as you're connected to Xbox Live, the online is all integrated into the game, which is really cool. Like, players can leave messages for one another. Like, they can warn you about an enemy ahead. Like, hey, you need to have arrows. Or watch out for fire. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of warnings, it's helpful. But players also leave a lot of unhelpful things just to mess with you. Mm-hmm. I went up to a shopkeeper and I read a message and it said, try killing him. So I killed the shopkeeper, and now I have all this equipment I can't sell to him. I can't buy equipment from him because I killed him. I mean, I looted all of his stuff, but still, I wish I hadn't killed him. And the other thing is, other players can kill you. Like, their souls are wandering around, and they can actually hurt you. And I was actually in one of the beginning areas, and there were some higher, I'm assuming they were higher level because they killed me in one hit. And they were just, like, guarding this pathway, and I couldn't go that way, so. Online is frustrating sometimes, but I think it's a good thing overall because it just makes the game much more, you just get the feeling of more of the open world. And
so you have the unlimited potential to be just a complete giant cock?
Oh, absolutely. If you can just, make the game even more miserable for some people.
So, with all the frustrations and all the things that, you know, you hear rage quit a lot when you talk about this series, mm-hmm. even with all this maddening experiences, is this a game that you can see yourself finishing?
Yeah, I can, because I don't know. I just, every time I died, I didn't like get super angry about it. I felt okay. I died. I got to just watch out for this next time. I got to watch out for, you know, the cannonball falling. It's a lot of trial and error. It's a lot of, you have to know your limitations, like your character level. You say, okay, I can't go in this area because these guys will kill me. One thing I wish they kind of explained the game a little better. There's a lot of equipment and things you can do that they didn't really give a tutorial on. They just assumed you would learn it as you go, and I actually had to Google some stuff because I didn't understand it. There is a story to the game, but it's kind of, it takes a back burner, I guess.
So, even though they didn't give you a tutorial, did they give you a handbook with the game?
Yeah, I mean, there's a manual, but I feel like most people aren't going to read the manual. And I rented the game, so it didn't come with a manual. So that was my big thing. I felt like there should have been, I mean, there was a little tutorial at the beginning, like, here's how you swing your sword, and here's how you block with your shield, which you definitely need to know or you're screwed because everything will kill you. But the combat is one of the most exhilarating experiences I've ever had, just because, like, the enemies you fight are ridiculous. It is a little unfair, but it's just so damn cool that I have to say it's worth renting. I wouldn't buy it outright. I would rent it. If it's your kind of game, you know, go for it, because I can definitely see this game is not for everybody, so do not just go out and buy it.
Gotcha.
Yes. So that was our main topic. So Batman Arkham City, Steven, your thoughts, should you go out and buy it?
Yes. Yeah. Don't even bother with the rent. Man up, go buy it.
Okay, and with Dark Souls, I think you should probably rent it. I'd suggest Redbox. $2 gets you for a night, and in one night you'll definitely get the feeling of the game and if you're gonna enjoy it or not. All right, well, that's it for our main topic. When we come back, we'll talk about our final three topics. Stay tuned.
Want to hear more? View the episode archives at level7podcast.com.
Welcome back, boys and girls, to the Level 7 Podcast. We are nearing the end, but we've got three more topics to talk about. 2 minutes each. Let's get started. Pokemon Gray website has been registered, signaling the upcoming release of the third game in this cycle. What are your thoughts on what we all knew was going to happen?
Of course, the original thought is, well, it's about that time. You knew Gray was coming, because they just did Black and White, and it's really kind of a no-brainer.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering what they could add to it. Usually it's just more battles in one way or another, and they do some mini-games. But one of the things I would suggest, with Black and White, they kind of reverted back to a level of difficulty I believe was lost. It was actually challenging through some portions of the game, and I don't remember being challenged by a Pokemon game for a while. If they, even though it was already challenging, if they could ramp up the difficulty even more, I'd love it. I might actually buy it, and I already have a copy of Black.
They could make it like Dark Souls.
Exactly. If they could just randomly, you know, have a trainer pop up and just kill me out of nowhere, I'd love it.
Yeah, can you imagine, like, you're a beginner and you're walking through tall grass and, like, three trainers come up to fight you and they all release their Pokemon at once?
And then that would be perfect.
Well, what I thought was interesting was Game Freak, the makers of Pokemon, actually denied that they're going to make Pokemon Gray, which is kind of stupid. I mean, you know it's coming. I mean, if you registered it, and they registered the domain with the same company that makes all their other websites. And like you said, it's a typical release. With Red and Blue, you got Yellow. With Diamond and Pearl, you got Platinum. So Black and White, you get Gray. And
here's a really big question, though, and it's really intriguing. What system do they release it for?
Probably DS. Well, I think they've already started working on it.
Well, even if they've already started working on it, let's just say, you know, they get it out in time, they're still going to release it for, you know, a system that Nintendo's not really going to show support for. So are they going to, you know, are they going to at least try to push it to the 3DS? Because I think this title, if they put it on the 3DS, would really, really help those kind of lagging hardware sales.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So, all right. Kind of jumping across the pond here, so to speak. Portal 2 is getting a level editor as part of some new DLC content. What are your thoughts on this, Norm?
I think this is incredible. And the reason I say that is Portal is an amazing game, great experience, but it didn't have a lot of longevity, you know, ways to keep you coming back. And with this level editor, this just opens up, like, so much stuff. It's just, it's a long time coming, I guess is what I'm saying.
I do, yeah, it will help with the longevity, and that's good. you know, the Portal series came out, it was fun, it was unique, people really enjoyed it. So to add longevity to that, I think, you know, really does a credit to the art form. Here's my problem with it. The levels that everybody enjoys in Portal and the levels that everybody enjoys in any game are designed by a team of professionals, not by the dude down the street. And this has been my argument against user generated content in video games for a while now. Yeah, you can make your own thing. It might be kind of cute, might be kind of fun, but is it really going to have the quality of, you know, what Valve can put out?
See, I disagree with that, and the reason I do is Valve made another game called Counter-Strike a long time ago, and user maps were a huge part of that game, and they were good, if not better, than some of the maps that were included with the game. So I think users can create really good content, and I think we're going to see a lot of cool stuff.
Well, I think, okay, you're right. There will be a diamond in the rough every now and again. It's just kind of, it is going to happen. However, how much garbage are you going to have to sift through before you can actually get to the good stuff?
Yeah, there's always going to be tons of bad maps, but hopefully they make a good system where you can browse the maps and get, you know, a top rated one or the most, you know, most downloaded. And our final topic, the latest Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 trailer is claiming itself as the, and I quote this, the most anticipated game in history. Does this seem accurate?
Okay. I'm a little jaded on this subject. Norm, as you know, I've recently moved to a new place and haven't really found true gaming communities, like real people interactions. The people I am around that say they play video games, this is all they talk about is Modern Warfare 3. I mean, most of the people that I deal with when we talk about video games, they bring up Call of Duty. So from that point of view, for me, just hearing it constantly, I can see where somebody would say this.
Mm-hmm. I think it is one of the most ridiculous statements I have ever heard from a game trailer. And first of all, Modern Warfare 2 was a huge letdown. That was a very highly anticipated game because the first Modern Warfare was pretty darn good. Second one, it wasn't that good. It wasn't as good as the first one. And now they're saying, oh, well, now Modern Warfare 3 is definitely the most anticipated game in history. And I say no to that because I don't know if you remember, Super Mario Bros. 3 had a whole movie dedicated to its anticipation. Do you remember a movie called The Wizard?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. That is a highly anticipated game. Modern Warfare 3... the most anticipated game in history is ludicrous that they would say that.
Right. And I got some other games to tack on to this. Because like I said, this was, from my point of view, this is just, you know, the people that I'm hearing that are around me. But after, like, actually sitting down to think about it, any Zelda game is going to have more than that. StarCraft 2 and Diablo 3.
Yeah, Mario game. Even Mario games. I think, like, right. The platforming ones.
And we are forgetting a game that had over a decade of anticipation that finally came out, and that's Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah. But bottom line, a lot of people that play Call of Duty criticize some games for being the same over and over again, like the Madden series, for example. But you got to take a look at yourself. These Call of Duty games, they're kind of the same over and over again, and they're released quite often. So yeah, need to reevaluate how they see themselves in the gaming community. All right, well, those are our seven topics, and do want to go over a few things. We do have a mailbag section. If you have any questions, comments for us, you can talk to us on Twitter at Level7Cast. We're on Facebook. Just search for us, Level 7 Podcast. We're on iTunes. Steven, iTunes.
Yes, very much so. Big deal, big deal, big deal.
Huge. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. That way, as soon as a new episode is posted, you get it on your iPod immediately. And of course, we have an email, level7cast@gmail.com. For all of this information, we have a website, level7podcast.com. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Level 7 Podcast. Steven, any final words for our dear viewers?
Be safe, don't play in traffic, and if you do, wear shiny yellow pants so at least the people can see you when you get hit.
And I have this to say, if you put googly eyes on anything, it instantly becomes funny.
No words have been more true.
Thank you. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Level 7 Podcast. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Good night.